Hey, React Roundup fans. I wanted to really quickly talk about the sponsor of today's episode, me. I'm Jamin Holmgren, co-founder of Infinite Red, an occasional guest on React Roundup. We are a small but experienced team of 30 US-based React Native consultants. We've been around since 2015 and have a lot of experience in React Native going all the way back to the beginning. If you're looking for expert help building, optimizing, deploying, and supporting a React Native app, I'd love to chat. Just go to infinite.red/React Roundup. And don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Roundup podcast so that we can keep supporting the show. Now, back to the episode.
Save on family favorites throughout the store at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get value packs of USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast for the member price of $4.99 per pound. Plus, 18 to 19 ounce cans of Progresso Soup are $1.99 each when you buy four. Member price. Also, this week at Safeway, selected varieties of Artisano Bread or Bonds 13.55 to 20 ounce or buy one, get one free when you buy two. Member price. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
Welcome to React Roundup. I'm your host for today, Jack Harrington, and with me is the incomparable TJ Van Toll.
Hey, everybody.
And our guest for today is Vijit Ait. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and why you are of interest to the React Roundup audience?
So, my name is Vijit Ait, and I'm a software engineer from Mumbai, India. I have been working with React and React Native for the past couple of years, and recently I also started working with Node.js. When I'm not at work, you'll find me writing guides and articles for Medium, LogRocket, and my personal blog. So, yeah, that is pretty much it.
That's awesome. So, I know you recently wrote a blog post on React Hook Form. It's a personal favorite of mine. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
So React Hook Form is basically a library that helps you handle and manage state of the form, like in a very easy and clear way. Yeah.
Very cool. So does that include things like validation?
Yeah, it includes validation, state management, like form data management, and it has a great developer experience. And one of the cool things I like about React Hook Form is that it has isolated re-renders. So when a data in the form changes, so only that particular component or input changes and not the whole form. So that's a huge plus on the performance side.
Yeah, and even to take a step back, I've always found it interesting how React really doesn't give you much. You could argue it doesn't really give you much of anything for handling forms, which I mean, like there's two different, like anything else, right? You could look at it like, oh, that's a positive because it enables this ecosystem of things, but it could also be construed as a negative because if you just went straight to the React documentation, right, and you looked for building a form, you probably would walk away from that pretty disappointed because it's not really going to do a whole ton for you. So I'm curious, like what sort of forms are you building? Like what made you like drawn to React Hook Form? And maybe you could just lay out a little bit of like the form landscape of React, like were there other options you explored, other things? Cause I think there's a lot we could potentially cover with this because there's a lot out there.
Correct. So like when I was starting out, I started with Redux Form, I guess. So I didn't know that there was other options. So for me, Redux was a go-to library when it came to state management. But as I explored more, then I realized that, okay, so I don't need the whole state, like the form state to be in the global state. So I decided that, okay, cool. So I need to look out for a new library. So then I looked up Formic. So Formic was a great, great library for me. Like it worked, like I used to install that on pretty much every project that I worked on until I found React Hook Form. That was even more, like I found it even more better in terms of performance and developer experience. Now, when I was working with Formic, the thing was that I had to use the wrapper for Formic component, higher order component. So I thought that, okay, maybe this could be much better. And then I started looking around and I found this great library, React Hook Form, that was very great one. And yeah, the only part of React Hook Form is that it does not work with class components out of the box. So you have to create a wrapper or something like that.
Are you using a lot of class components?
Not really. Like currently, like the code base currently I'm working on pretty much has everything on function components.
So not really a big issue. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So can you tell folks who haven't actually tried out React Hook Form, like, so what are the basic mechanics of using this?
So like you can just use form hook. So the use form hook basically returns an object with a register function, a set values function, values object, and the errors and set errors. So these are the basic ones. And so if you want to get data from an input, you just pass the destructure the register object on that input, and it will just do its own magic. So that is like a very basic implementation.
Nice.
Right? You don't have to use a wrapper component or anything like that.
Just, nice. And does it work with stuff like Material UI or components like that? People are using those?
Yeah, it does work with Material UI, like any third-party component that has ref or that exposes the ref. You can pretty much use React Hook Form with it. But in some cases, we don't usually get the option to use ref. So you can use the controller component or the use controller hook of React Hook Form. Yeah. And that will do the trick for you.
Cool. So yeah, I remember from the documentation, there were some really good examples of all of these systems working together. So it's really well documented that way.
Yeah, the documentation is pretty nice. And they have the API reference of every component, every hook that they have, and it's very well explained and detailed there. So like your single source of truth would be the documentation.
Nice.
I'm really interested in the performance aspect of this, because I've just been kind of perusing the React Hook Form site, because in my head, like the two big players in the React Form world are Formic and React Hook Form, or at least those are the two that seem to come up the most. And it sounds like what you said, like performance was the main sort of differentiating feature for you. So I'm curious, like, what were you using to like benchmark or determine those performance problems? Were you using like benchmarks numbers, or was it bad enough that like it was even like visibly noticeable in your applications?
So I'll tell you a story. So I got this, form which had over 20, 24, 25 inputs. So, and there was no library being used there. So it was just a custom hook with the use reducer or use state, I think. And what was happening is every time you press the keyboard on any input, so the whole form rendered. And the form was quite heavy. Like it had 25 inputs in there. And every time you pressed a key, the whole form would lag. You would visibly see it. So it was the worst. So then I had to take a call. So like I migrated from that custom hook to the React Hook Form.
Nice. So for folks who are in your like doing the kind of stuff that you did with Redux and Forms Manager in Redux, does using something like React Hook Form preclude using Redux? Can you use the two together?
Yeah, you can definitely use them together. And they both have different functions. So for example, if the real question is, do you want your form state to be global or not? If you want it to be global, you can go with Redux Form, not a problem. But in most cases, I think the form state should be local, like should be local to that particular component. And so React Hook Form just does a job for you.
Okay. So you'd use React Hook Form then to manage the local form. And then once it's done or saved or canceled, then you'd fire off an action to Redux to say, this is the new state, that kind of thing.
Correct.
Okay, right. Cool. Very good. Very nice.
I'm curious. I keep coming back to the performance aspect of this, but for the isolated like re-render stuff, is that just built into the way React Hook Form works? Is there something you have to be like careful of how you approach things, or like are there any sort of like foot guns or things to be aware of, or does it kind of just, is that just sort of the design that it works in that isolated sort of way?
Yeah, React Hook Form is built with performance in mind. So it uses uncontrolled inputs, right? It leverages ref so that the whole component does not re-render only that particular input.
I see. So, and I'm guessing like does Formic work more on like a controlled basis then, where it's actually having to then adapt like sort of re-render based off each key press or to like each change, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Formic does that. Formic re-renders on every change. Like, it's been a while since I used Formic, so like I don't know the current state.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because I'm guessing it sort of depends on what you're building, right? Because your considerations for building a login form, like chances mm-hmm. are, like, you're not going to hit any performance issues on a username and a password sort of thing. But I think with forms specifically, like, it's totally reasonable to have forms with 20 some inputs. I've worked on big insurance apps in the past, and those things are just absolute monsters, right? So those are like real world, real considerations. So it's, I don't know if there's a question here. I'm just sort of interested in the different approaches these libraries are taking.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to talk about controlled versus uncontrolled, because I don't know if everybody is up to speed on that. So a controlled input is when, and this is what you see kind of in a traditional React walkthrough, which is like you've got use state, you know, which would be have your state of your text field, right? And you have value equals and that value, and then on change, you go and set the state and all that. And that would be a controlled input, right? And then uncontrolled input is where you just have a ref, and you got a ref to that component. And then when you need the value, you just go to the ref.current.value, whatever it is, and you get the value. And there you go. And there's a big speed boost in using those uncontrolled components. And actually, in the React documentation, they now recommend that. So if that's the basic mechanism of React Hook Form, is to do that with uncontrolled inputs, that's actually really cool.
Yeah. And I think also, too, for beginners, like, if anybody here hasn't tried building a form in React without any libraries, it's a worthwhile effort to do once, probably only once, just to see like how painful it can get. Cause it sounds like you say like, oh, you like use state, and then like you need an on change handler that updates the state. And like you do it for one form control, and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. But then you work in a real app that has, once you get to like three or four fields on a form, you instantly realize like, okay, like, I do not want to type this anymore. I'm either going to make a mistake or like I'm going to lose my mind typing all of this out. So I think that's what leads you to the Google searches that brings us to a library like this, because it just gets monotonous at any sort of scale whatsoever.
Oh yeah, there's validation, and then there's also, you know, managing dirty state and errors. You know, it's not an error until somebody puts in the wrong value, and then it's dirty and it's an error, and all, and you have to do this on a per field basis. It's a huge, huge pain.
Yeah. Actually, that leads me to a question. So with React Form, is it only about the like logic end of things? Does it help you presentationally at all? Like, well, does it, or is that totally up to you? Like, will it help with where you place validation messages or anything like that?
Well, not really. Like, it does not help with any, presentation side, but it does give you the independence to, you know, work with whatever design you got, and you can access the errors object from the, you know, use form hook, and then, you know, you just place wherever you, you know, want the error to be displayed.
Do you have any libraries you've used or you've recommend for that sort of thing? Because I think probably for most people, when you need a form, like, this almost to me sounds like one part of the problem, right? Like, I need like the plumbing mm-hmm. under the hood, but then I also want my inputs to look good. I want error messages to show up logically. Because, I mean, we could almost have a full conversation on the UX side of like how forms are supposed to work, right? Because that can come into play too, and libraries can somewhat help with that. So I'm curious what you've used in the past for that sort of thing, and if you have any recommendations.
So I've worked with Material UI before. Like, I have used Material UI, Bootstrap, and yeah, also Bulma. So these libraries help with the presentation side. So you can simply integrate React Hook Form with these, you know, UI libraries, and it is pretty seamless and works great.
And I think these hook libraries, I think both Hook Form and Formic, they're tiny, aren't they? Like, do people have to be worried about file size of this? I'm pretty sure they're small.
Yeah, okay. React Hook Form has a very tiny size. Like, I think it's 5 or 6 KB.
Oh yeah, that's tiny.
Yeah, Bundlephobia, I think, puts it at 24, which is still like super light. Bundlephobia is a great site for doing that kind of stuff.
I love that name, Bundlephobia.
Bundlephobia, yeah, absolutely. So Vijit, you went from Redux to hooks, right? And tell us a little bit about that migration for you, because I think it is a very different model of thinking about how you manage and structure and store state.
Right. So like any other beginner developer, I decided straight away that I wanted to use Redux, because everywhere I looked online, everyone was like, okay, if you're using React, you also need a state management library like Redux or Mobix. So I was like, let's go with Redux. And I pretty much started with there. And then I got into this form problem. Like I did not, I had to write the form myself. So I was like, okay, let's go with Redux form because it is, compatible. So I choose that. And then
save on family favorites throughout the store at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get value packs of USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast for the member price of $4.99 per pound. Plus 18 to 19 ounce cans of Progresso Soup are $1.99 each when you buy four. Member price. Also this week at Safeway, selected varieties of Artisano Bread or Bonds 13.55 to 20 ounce are buy one, get one free when you buy two. Member price. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
Unborn babies may kick their mother 30 times an hour, making moms wonder, is that a karate champion in there? Well, one thing she won't wonder about is finding a great doctor at one of our 65 convenient Bay Area locations, Stanford Medicine Children's Health.
After that, I was like, then I realized that, okay, I don't need Redux for every project that I work on, so I can use context, right? So then, yeah, then I sort of changed my thought process into, think state management from a component level instead of a global level.
So, cool.
Yeah.
And was there any learning that you had to do to make that happen? Like, were there any I have to rethink my thinking about how I would do this versus that?
Not really. Like I just, I just went through a couple of guides on those topics, like how to structure your React project or how to organize your React code. So those sort of topics. That is it.
Cool.
So you said you have some React Native experience as well. So I'm curious what the form world is like there, because it looks like React Hook Forms website says they run on React Native as well. So are you using the same library on the web and native? How does all that work?
Yes. So on the native world as well, like I used to work with Formic, but then I switched to use Form, this React Hook Form. And then I realized that you cannot use ref directly. So you had to use, unfortunately, you had to use the controller higher order component for that in React Native.
And so what does that mean? Is it like registering what the components are? So like, because I imagine like the part that, and I did some native stuff for a while too, but this still blows my mind. But like something about the act of like React talking to like native iOS and native Android controls. I imagine what like this is like wrapping it so that Formic knows how to talk to those React Native controls. Is that more or less right, or am I making things up?
Yeah, like the same thing only, because like the controller, like in React Native, the native inputs have these props like on change text, on blur, etc. So these work do the same job as your web component. So that is pretty much it. And basically, controller has this render prop which gives you these value on change these properties like on change and value of that particular field, and then you can just simply map those field to your component. Like for example, your input can have a name, and so important part is that the controller must have a name property, otherwise the form wouldn't know which field it is that's meant to.
So I'm curious, the React Native application that you're working on, is it the same form as the one that you had on the web?
No.
Okay.
We don't have that much inputs in that form, like simple login, logout, those sort of things.
All right. Because I think it's great, the idea of sharing business logic code, like validation and how the forms work together and the dependencies and the configuration of that, and sharing that between React and React Native. I would love to see that. because that's the point, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I worked back in a few years ago, I worked on the native script team, and we were like a kind of sort of competitor with React Native, and we had some stuff in that space as well. And that was always the dream. It's the reality is it can work, but it has to be like the right, it's got to be an app that's like relatively simple. Like it's got to be complex enough that you're actually getting some value out of sharing code, but it also can't be so complex because once you start needing things customized for each platform, then the value of sharing that code can kind of fall apart. So we had some success stories. We had some people that were doing it, but they were like the low to mid complexity sorts of situations where it tended to work out the best. But it's interesting stuff. And I still find it cool. Like it, even like I said, I've worked in this world for a while. And even when I see websites for this and they say it can work on web and native, that still just strikes me as really, really fun. Cause how cool is it that you can learn this library and then you go over to your iOS or Android app development and it's like, oh, hey, I already know how to do forms here. Like that's kind of cool actually.
Yeah. And there are component libraries out there nowadays that supposedly are cross React and React Native. So that could be really cool. We got more questions.
So we talked about React Hook forms. You said you work on other stuff. Are there any other topics you're interested in that you've been writing about, you're passionate about?
Well, I've worked with have you guys worked with Type ORM before?
Could you say that again?
Type ORM.
I have not.
So it's basically, I've used the Type ORM with React Native. So like it's like a model layer for communicating with the SQLite database. So you can use objects to represent data in the database. So
nice. And this would be on the client side?
Yeah, it's on the client side.
Nice.
Like Type ORM pretty much works on every client as well, and as well as on the server with SQL and MongoDB, I think. So yeah. So
very cool. Does it have TypeScript bindings? So it's actually like strongly typed if you want that.
Yeah.
Nice.
It has.
Do you do any TypeScript?
Not very.
So I'm curious. Type ORM, like this is like I'm just trying to think of how I use this in a real world app, right? So I'm building my React app. I've got my form. And I need to push, I'm building an insurance form. So I need people's like name, address, that sort of thing. And then presumably I need to push this to some database. So is this helping me then like map my calls to actually like directly inject that data into the database and update it? Or how is, I'm not totally clear on what this library is doing for me.
So are you talking about the client side or the server side? Like
potentially both. Because Type ORM is it entirely, well, you said it works on both ends of things.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. So on the client side, in general, what you do is you have some tables like in your database and you have the columns. So you can create an object which is called an entity to represent those tables. Right. So if you have a user's table, you can create a user entity and have properties like name, password, and other stuff. So in terms of client, what you can do is in a React Native application, you can have a form, and then on submit, you can just call the insert method or the save method of type ORM with that entity. So from an entity, you can create a repository. And repository gives you access to those methods like save and insert. And basically you just give those values to the save method.
Gotcha. So it's kind of helping with some of the boilerplate so that you don't have to like wire all of that up yourself.
Right. So here the main problem that Type ORM solves on the client, on the React Native world is that you don't have to write the raw SQL queries yourself. Right. So as a front-end developer, I don't need to write SQL queries directly. So basically Type ORM gives you, ability to insert into database, communicate with database without having to write queries.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even think about this from like a React Native perspective, but I guess like when you're in React Native, you could have the database right there, right? Like you don't have to hit a backend to do it. So that's actually kind of cool. If you could generate it itself, you're like instantaneously working with the database without any extra work.
Right.
Yeah, particularly if you want like a cache or something like that, and you want to manage that. This is a really nice way to do that in a kind of a strongly typed way and get, you know, structure the data on the client just as well as you do on the back end, which is pretty cool. And it works on native script. Don't you make
it? Yeah. Oh yeah, there you go. So then this sort of fascinates me a little bit. So if you're working with like a local SQL-based database, are you working on that like in a cache sort of setting, or are you eventually taking that data and then like persisting it to a backend as well? And how does that interaction work?
Yes. So we usually store like it as a cache, as a local storage, mainly for, you know, providing better user experience. So, you know, whenever the user, you know, push some data, we first store it in the local database, right? And then, you know, once he has a stable connection, we then push it to our server. So that's how it works. So it just basically helps you in providing better user experience, and users don't have to wait for that data to be pushed. Like it can happen in a background service or asynchronously in the background.
And does TypeORM help with that specifically, or is something else that handles like the syncing of the database?
No, TypeORM does not do that out of the box. Like for me, we had a separate table which mapped these entities to a Boolean value, like is synced, is one or zero. Like if it is synced, then we don't sync it like that.
That's really handy from a customer. That's really handy from a customer perspective, you know, being able to have that offline mode and then work offline and then resync when you have connectivity. That's just absolutely wonderful.
Right. Yeah. So you don't have to show, you know, a no internet page to your customer.
I imagine though, like you probably do have to deal with the like out of sync type of problems, or like do you have in your apps, are users like isolated in their own data? Like, do you have to worry about like users potentially?
Save on family favorites throughout the store at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get value packs of USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast for the member price of $4.99 per pound. Plus, 18 to 19-ounce cans of Progresso Soup are $1.99 each when you buy four. Member price. Also, this week at Safeway, selected varieties of Artisano Bread or Bonds 13.55 to 20-ounce are buy one, get one free when you buy two. Member price. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
Unborn babies may kick their mother 30 times an hour, making moms wonder, is that a karate champion in there? Well, one thing she won't wonder about is finding a great doctor at one of our 65 convenient Bay Area locations. Stanford Medicine Children's Health.
Messing with other data and like how to deal with conflicts and stuff like that.
So usually we have like a data, like the local database does not have the ability to store data for multiple users. Like the currently logged in user that you have, only that user's data would be available in the client side. And we don't sync all the data to the server, only what we require. But in case there is a slight miss or inconsistency, that is just, you know, you have to roll with it.
Yeah, it definitely makes it a lot easier, because like those sorts of situations, I've dealt with people in the past that are, it's like, oh, we want our apps to totally work offline. And the situation is like, it's a group of employees that are all working on like some sort of dashboard, right? And they can all be messing with the same ones. And it's like, okay, like we can do this, but like, what happens if employee A changes the order date and employee B changes the order date offline, and then employee B comes back online, and it just becomes like you can spend lots and lots of cycles and time trying to work through those. And I know like there are frameworks out there that try to have smart defaults around that, but none of them are especially fun when you get into that situation.
Last in wins.
Yes, exactly. Period.
Right. Make it easy. Time for picks?
Yeah. Vijit, is there any other pieces of tech, any other things you think are interesting or want to discuss before we head into picks?
Well, can we talk about the backend stuff? Like,
sure.
Yeah. So are you guys familiar with Nest.js,
the framework? That'd be great. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Can we? Yeah, go for it. Oh, okay. So Vijit, I think you also have some experience with Nest.js. Why don't you tell us about that?
So yeah, so Nest.js is a backend frame, a Node.js framework that helps you organize your code and have strong typings on your services. So like, which comes really handy when you have a lot of services and a lot of APIs. And certainly, and also it has a great developer experience. Once again, you can isolate your code and you can have separate modules as per your business logic. And yeah.
Cool. So this is for building your REST backend in Node, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, right.
Nice. And it makes it really easy to do that?
Yeah. So basically, Nest.js has these boilerplate commands. So you just run a command for a module and it would create a module file for you. So it is inspired by Angular, right? It has syntax and decorators similar to Angular. And they have pretty much everything covered in the library. If you want cache, if you want database, and type ORM is the go-to choice for handling database.
So if you're thinking about building your own REST API, instead of just going direct to like an Express and just building it down to the kind of base layer, you can use Nest.js and kind of level up there. Nice.
Right, right.
And it's N-E-S-T, correct? Not N-E-X-T. Right. I swear, like the React world is
two totally different things, yes.
It's like if you're building a front-end React framework, you have to name it something that starts with R-E, like Remix, Redux, React. And like if you're doing back-end stuff, you got to go N-E, apparently. I did have a question, though. With Nest, is there anything proprietary about it? Can you then take your back-end and throw it up on like any backend, or is there specific hosting requirements?
No, like there's no property license or anything. Like you can create your own code base and just push it to AWS or any server.
Okay. And they have cats all over their website. So there's that too.
That's always a win. Well, Vijit, thank you for bringing some great stuff to us today. And I think that brings us around to picks. So, Vijit, do you want to start us off and give your pick?
Yeah. So my pick would be Stephen Grider's microservices course. So he talks about microservices, Node.js in great detail in that course. So do check it out.
Fantastic. Yeah. TJ?
So I'm going to pick a game called Super Mario 3D World for the Switch. It's a fun multiplayer game. It's basically just your classic Mario, right? I think that's they know what they're doing, right? There's not much curveballs, but it's just typical, like really well executed. It's a great multiplayer game. So I play it with my kids. It's up to four people simultaneously playing classic Mario. And it's just, if you're looking for Mario, it's just a really good one for the Switch. So we've been having some fun with that and playing through it. And it's pretty challenging actually too. I've been playing Mario for a long time, but I've got to get my kids, got to train them up, right? Got to get the next generation ready.
Yeah, I've been playing some Ratchet and Clank lately, and I'm in a competition with my next door neighbor to see which one of us can go faster. And unfortunately, my work's taken over my life, so I haven't gotten. I know work.
Stupid responsibilities. I mean, always
right? Getting in the way. Adulting, it's tough.
Yeah.
So my pick for today is nx.dev. It's a monorepo management system. It's really cool. So I've got a very small engineering team at my company. I mean, it's just basically three folks, and we manage four different applications and like six different libraries. And to do that all in different GitHub repositories would be crazy just in terms of managing all that. And so we use a monorepo, and I know there's a lot of contention around that, but it's come in really, really handy for us. And NX, if you haven't actually built your own monorepo, is a fantastic way to do it. It's got extensions for Nest, and as we just talked about, and Next, and just basic React apps or Angular, whatever kind of projects you want to put into this monorepo, it's got generators for them, and it makes them all talk together and do it in a really, really nice way. So if you want a monorepo in your project and you're like, how am I going to get there? Do I need to know how to make this thing myself? You don't have to. NX.dev, check it out. Really cool.
We're going to have to do a show on monorepos once.
Oh, yeah.
I have opinions. I think It's one of those classic dev topics, right? Everybody.
Oh my gosh,
you either like it or you hate it.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, Vijit, that's been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a great experience coming here.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Save on family favorites throughout the store at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get value packs of USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast for the member price of $4.99 per pound. Plus, 18 to 19 ounce cans of Progresso Soup are $1.99 each when you buy four. Member price. Also, this week at Safeway, selected varieties of Artisano Bread or Bonds 13.55 to 20 ounce are buy one, get one free when you buy two. Member price. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.